Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Time to bring the bass back.
All right, you guys, welcome to the midweek edition of the Temple of Hoop podcast. We are live on Spotify Green Room. I'm here, as always, with the homie Kings. This week, we have a very special guest, friend of the pod, since from when we were out the trunk on SoundCloud, trying to make it pop. He's been rocking with us since day one. Chris Conner, what's going on, my boy?
What up, man? I got to say, man, before all the petty and the nonsense start, man, I'm proud of where y'all have taken this thing, man, and can only imagine where it's going to continue to go. You know, you got y'all potting back, you know what I mean, multiple times in a week, and the playoffs about to start, so I know y'all going crazy, man. So shout out to y'all, man, and Temple of Hoop, man.
All good, man. We appreciate it. All right, so first off, to get it going, congratulations. Your Pelicans locked up that play-in spot. They are playing basketball beyond the regular season. Just deciding whether the game is going to be in New Orleans or the Spurs. They have to finish one game ahead of the Spurs because the Spurs took the tiebreaker, winning 2 out of 3 in the season series. The first thing I wanted to ask you, Chris, and you know, you're super tapped into this team. What happened when that team was at 3-16 to change the whole trajectory of the season?
Man, that's a really good question. And I mean, I know it's more complicated than, you know, than any one answer can really specify, but the best thing that I could tell you from everybody that I've talked to and what's been written and been out there, shout out to my man, Jeremy J-Dub, that's in here, you know, was Willie Green, man. You know, it just seemed as if, you know, he found a way to hold things together, hold that locker room, keep them, you know, believing that, you know, even the comments along the lines of, you know, you guys are losing games right now that, you know, today that you're going to win months from now. You know, stuff like that, man. Just finding ways to believe, you know, cutting the season into sections versus just looking at it at a full 82 game spectrum at a time. You know, just stuff like that. And then once you start winning, you start building off that afterwards, and things start to turn around, and you start seeing some guys get back healthy. You start seeing some improvements. You set yourself up to make moves down the line to where you're not even thinking about that no more. So, but it had to start from somewhere, and from everything that everybody that I talked to, everything that I've seen, heard, and read, you know, you got to give, I mean, the players definitely deserve. Brandon Ingram being healthy matters of course, unlike anything, you know, I mean, else when you look at the record without him. But I think we got to give a lot of credit to Willie Green and what he's been able to do.
Yeah, man, that was the Brandon Ingram when he plays and doesn't play record is kind of hilarious. They go from a late seed playoff team to right in the Jabari, Chet, Jaden Ivey sweepstakes whenever he doesn't play. So that's kind of crazy. So talk about what you've seen from B.I. Me and Kings have argued. I think B.I. is the best wing playmaker in the league that's not named LeBron or Luka. Kings has his boy Jimmy Butler ahead of him, so we've argued about that a couple times. But just talk about kind of what you've seen from Brandon. A lot of it, because the numbers don't really tell the tale from rhythm shares. It's not much of a difference, but there's obviously been a leap in his impact and winning. So just a guy who's seen pretty much all, you know, 79 of their games. What's been the biggest leap for you?
Well, first of all, that's a hell of a conversation to have that I need to hear on wax if it's not already on there. That's a discussion I don't think people have often. And I was thinking, you know, I'm over here trying to come up with names, and Jimmy Butler's a good one. I think just the way he's approaching the game and how visually it looks like he's seeing the game differently. You know what I mean? I mean, he's spent a lot. I think earlier in the year, I saw some flashes of B.I. kind of, you know, rushing into things, maybe being a little bit too hyped up, maybe, you know, taking some plays that really aren't there. But I mean, once he got into a complete groove, man, you saw somebody who just, you know, he was seeing the play before it was available. And, you know, mentally when, you know, Maples, you know, mentally when that light turns on for guys, man, it's with that level of talent. I mean, it's curtains. So, I mean, I had already felt like the passing, even dating back to his years in L.A., I've seen him run point guard, right, when guys would go down. Or even, you know, at points when, you know, when guys were healthy. I've seen that level of ability. But the consistency on top of playing with some of the guys that he was out there with, and there's a long list of players that we don't even have to name this year. I mean, looking at boxing one coverages, looking at just the, you know, the type of things that we saw him deal with, this guy out the lineup, that guy out the lineup. You playing with a team that's not built for you. It's not built around you. That guy isn't here to still make those leaps, especially just as a just visually, mentally, and as a playmaker, man. The way he, like, you watch B.I. even just pass the basketball. Those one-handed passes, they're crisp. They're not telegraphed. It just feels like a combination of everything just, you know, coming together for him at the right time on top of the work on his body, and someone, you know, who bought in. And then you add them putting together talented guys next to him and getting healthy and some other improvements for guys that needed to be in different fits and so on and so forth. And you see a guy who, even like you mentioned, if the numbers aren't completely there, I think he's made a big jump this year and just how he's seeing the game and how you watch him pass the basketball. And even if, like, it doesn't have to be an assist for him, he's making the right play. And I mean, that's a big part of leadership, I think, for him, for someone who may not be the most vocal. I mean, he's making the unselfish plays and he's picking his spots a lot better, man.
Do you hear that, Kings? Do you hear that? Get out of here with Jimmy Butler.
I heard it.
I'm messing with you, bro.
You know, Jimmy been doing that for a minute, though.
That's true.
I think Jimmy got him. I think Jimmy got him, but I don't think it's for. I don't think it's for much longer, but I do agree with Kings. I think Jimmy got him.
And I also want to add the friend of the pod, Paul, I see you. Paul made a note to add that his boy KD is definitely a top-tier playmaker at the wing. So I have to 100% agree. That's my fault, Paul. I just get so caught up in KD scoring, I forget about the other part of his game, which you are 100% correct. I got you, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I told somebody that, and then they told me that KD himself said B.I. was better. But, you know, KD, he'd be doing that. He'd be showing love to guys he liked. But KD better for me.
Right. So let's real quick before we go into the rest of the league. The playing game, obviously, is going to be against the Spurs. It's just a matter of who is going, where the game's going to be, San Antonio or New Orleans. I've seen all three of those games. Aside from the one blowout, the Spurs has just been pretty giving the Pelicans hell. The other two games, it's kind of crazy to watch. So what are you looking for, like, the Pelicans to do differently than the two games that they've lost to the Spurs so far? Because they've been really close losses. They kind of beat themselves both games they lost.
Well, I mean, I'll say that, you know, number one, 14 got to be out there. But, you know, regardless, they got to – and man, in a lot of Pelicans games, that first quarter, man, is so telling. You know, and look, right. You know, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, look, for those that watched that Laker game, you know, last Sunday, man, look, I mean, I know they've had some really good comebacks and so on and so forth. But look, man, you could tell early in that first quarter a lot of times, like, which way the shit going. You know what I'm saying? Because the energy dictates it. Are they bringing a fight to the team they're going against, or are they letting the other team dictate, you know, how the game is going to go? And now, you know, you can finally look at the Pelicans and say, you know, the talent is there. It's creeping up to where if they go out there and play hard, play defense, right? If they go out there hungry, they should be able to put a team like San Antonio in the box. No disrespect. That's just where I think they're at, or they should feel like they're at right now. And when you look at all three of those games, I mean, that's kind of different. San Antonio wanted it more the game as soon as, I think, right before the All-Star break. CJ, I think it was CJ's second game. And then not the last game, but the game they played in San Antonio, New Orleans came out with all the energy, you know what I mean, and put the game away in the first quarter. And in game three, they get up
No DeJounte Murray. I'm sorry. DeJounte did play. B.I. didn't play. But the crowd was there. New Orleans get up by 10, and they start playing with their food. And San Antonio, you know what I mean? They're built to come back from situations like that and make you pay for, playing around or not taking care of the basketball, because 9 out of 10, they're not going to do the same thing on their side. So, that's really what it is to me, man. You come out and you set the tone, set the pace early in the first quarter and show that, we got things past just, we have aspirations past just this play. And even if it's still in a game or two against Phoenix, then I think you should be okay.
Yeah, the Spurs are always funny to me because they obviously need to blow it up, but Pop will not let them boys tank. So it's kind of hilarious. They did end up landing DeJounte as a late steal to get a star to build around, but it's just kind of hilarious how Pop will not let them boys tank under any circumstances. It's like against his religion. Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to that. The Clipper game last week was scary, man. It felt like the Clippers, like, y'all know y'all going to have to go through us to get to that A spot, and the Clippers kind of sent the message. Your boy Andrew Lopez from ESPN did let me know they were in L.A. for 5 days, so we're going to chalk that L up to the Zy. 5 days in L.A., so, that made me a little bit nervous for him, but, it'll be interesting. I'm happy to see my favorite player finally get to play basketball that means something. I mean, regular season matters, but it's not playoff atmosphere, so that's what I'm excited for, man.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On the other end of that, Kings, I know you hate doing it, but the Lakers were eliminated. We got to brush over them. Just a little bit, bro. I know you hate this part of it. The first report came out that Vogel is gone at the end of the season. So, Kings, do you have a couple names you want to drop in here to possibly replace him for next season?
Yeah, I actually saw somebody bring up Quinn Snyder, and I know, a lot of people have qualms with his ability to adjust or be stubborn in his ways, but honestly, with how the Lakers have been playing these past few seasons, you just need somebody who's gonna bring a modern approach to basketball offensively. And he's gonna, go one big. He's gonna use a lot of pick and roll. He's gonna make them try and space the floor out. He has modern principles. I think offensively, the Jazz honestly were fine. I mean, I just think they lacked, real playmakers or real guys who could slow down the game and be able to go off script. Donovan Mitchell, as good as he is, he struggles with making entry passes. I don't know if that's because he doesn't want to, or he just really can't hit them consistently. But, Joe Ingles was their best playmaker for the past, 4 years or whatever. So I think if they keep LeBron and they move Westbrook and they obviously get better role players, I think that'll be a good name. Doc Rivers is a hell no. Mike D'Antoni will be coaching the Sixers, so that doesn't really, he's not. So honestly, outside of Quinn, it's really not many names that really move me out there that's available. I think Quinn will be the best just because he has experience already. He has successfully implemented a good modern offense, and if they're not cheap, then you can go around the league looking for, prominent defensive assistants and see if you can get them on board. But I like Quinn. I like Quinn as the best pickup because Mike D'Antoni, he's going to coach the Sixers.
Right. So I got a question for Chris. Chris, as a guy who had rooted for AD for 7 years, how do you feel? Would you feel if the Lakers were to kind of get Alvin Gentry on the staff as a head coach or even as an assistant? Do you think that would be a good move for them?
I love assistant Alvin. I mean, I think he's he's proven over time in his career. I mean, even dating back to the stint in Golden State, that he does wonders, right? He does wonders as an assistant, as a head coach. for a multitude of reasons, bad luck, so you know, whatever you want to point to, it just hasn't rolled. It hasn't rolled his way, and we've had enough examples over time to kind of see it that way. But I mean, as an assistant, I mean, from everything you know that I know about their relationship, that you know, AD, you know, and Alvin were. I mean, I don't know how. I know that last season really took a toll on Alvin. You know, dealing with a lot of the drama that, you know, took place between AD and just him wanting to leave and get out of there. But if you could find a way, you know, to get him over there, I mean, I think it would be, you know, a really good addition to that coaching staff. I mean, and look, I mean, he's still, even at his age, one of the better basketball minds I think that we have in the game, you know, players, coach. It would be, to me, a really good fit. You bring somebody that AD is familiar with. You know, and hopefully, you know, you can get him hungry and a full healthy off season, you know, to kind of maybe, you know, set up people like me to think, you know, he's I can't say was, but somebody who won't, you know, return back to that guy that we saw pre-bubble, in the bubble, and years before.
Right. And then Case, how would you feel about Gentry? I know, you know, Snyder's your guy. What would you think about Gentry? I'm to the point where I at least have him on staff. You know what I mean? But what are your thoughts on Gentry, King?
Yeah. I mean, on staff is great. I think on staff, you know, he'll be helpful providing input in terms of the game planning, in terms of like how to utilize Anthony Davis, you know, just helping things out with like pace. Like Alvin Gentry was great with pushing the pace, getting guys again on the run, getting guys in position to score where they, you know, at the positions that they like. You know, the Pelicans were very good offensively, at least. I mean, granted, they play too fast, but they're very good at offensively putting up points. I think it's good synergy with Quinn and with Gentry. I mean, honestly, it's just up to the Lakers and how much they want to spend. I think they could easily have him as an assistant, but does Genie want to, you know, break the purse out? I mean, we had Monty, we had Ty Lue, and we had Vogel, and we had Jay Kidd, and they ended up with the worst one somehow. So it's just really up to Genie at this point.
Oh man, that's now that that's come out about how the Lakers are unwilling to kind of spend beyond a certain amount, that's going to be definitely on the spotlight. How much Genie's willing to open the pocketbook here?
Which is crazy.
Yeah, right. The last thing I want to ask you, I think honestly, what today is, Chris, is just the owner's portfolio is basketball. You know, the other owners, they bought into basketball rich. The Lakers got rich through basketball. You know what I mean? So it's like they're not as flush with money as, you know, a Ballmer or the Memphis owner, who I just found out is not too far behind him. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Kings, what do you feel about Darvin Ham, man, from Milwaukee? Been interviewed a couple times for major head coaching gigs, been passed over. I look around the league. You know what's funny? The Bud coaching tree is not doing bad in the NBA, bro. So how do you feel about Darvin Ham?
I think based on what we've seen from this year, he deserves a shot. I mean,
right.
you have to give them a shot. I mean, you saw what happened when the T-Wolves gave our head coach from Nurse Tree a shot. After Nurse's success, and look where we at. You know, we immediately turned around from when we picked him up last year, midseason, up until now. So, I mean, you see the success he got over there in Memphis. I mean, you got to give him a chance. Like you got to give him a chance. They're doing it without Ja, with Ja. So, it's top to bottom success over there, top to bottom execution. So, I would poach anybody, honestly, from the front office too, because their front office is hit on all types of picks. Like whoever is over there, man, get them on your team, because they're just successful at everything they've been doing so far in terms of rebuilding their team quickly.
Man, so the last 10 minutes, we're going to open it up. I saw some questions in the chat. If you have something you want to come ask one of us, we're going about 10 to 15 more minutes. Go ahead and hit that button, and we'll get it going this last 10 minutes. In the chat here, we said, what makes the Grizzlies different from the Hawks, from Jessica Adair? I think defensively, defensively, the Grizzlies are much better. I like, if the Grizzlies would make it out the West, it wouldn't surprise me. The Hawks won last year, I would have been surprised. I also don't think the Hawks are going to run into a team that's going to fold like the 76ers, or the Grizzlies are, rather. That was a Hawks segment. Grayson ran into a really bad an unprepared 76ers team, and I think that the West is a little better than that.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's really like you said, there's multiple guys who can help, you know, run their offense. I think really that having a backup guard like Tyus Jones, for example, is really key, because if you look at the Hawks, when Trey was out, it was very hard for them to have a guard come in and run effective offense. I mean, if you look at Memphis, that's why you see they're so successful when Jaw's not on there. They have guys who can run their scheme. They got guys who can get other guys involved outside of Jaw. It's not just relying on Jaw to create for everybody. And then, like you said, defensively, they're just more versatile, I think. You know what I'm saying? I think with the Hawks, it was just hard to play Collins and Capella together, whereas you can play Jaren Jackson and Adams together and it actually makes sense. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. is really just versatile, all type of world ability on defense, where he can play outside, he can play inside. And you can pair him with Steven Adams. You can have Steven Adams do the dirty work and have Jaren Jackson guard on the outside and be the weak side help. Or you can play small ball with Jaren Jackson Jr. You couldn't really play effective small ball defensively with Collins, and he just wasn't that good on the perimeter defensively. So I think those are the main points, I think, that really separate Memphis from Atlanta. Is just they have more versatility on offense, and they have more versatility, just better defense.
Got it. Chris, this is for you. James, also a friend from the timeline, he said, what should the Pelicans do with the Lakers draft picks? I'll let you take that.
Burn it. No. To me, to be honest, man, it really depends on where it falls. I'm of the mindset, I mean, you know, when you're a small market, you definitely have to, you know, you want to take advantage of these moments and these situations to, you know, get talented players that are cost controlled, that you can put in environments in which, you know, maybe the average player that's being drafted in the top 10 isn't used to, you know, going into. So instead of, you know, let's say you're able to get into that top five area and you're drafting one of those individuals, no matter, you know, who it is, you know, Ivy or whether it's Chet or whether it's Paolo, whoever it is, you know, you have the opportunity to put them in a situation where they're not carrying a franchise and they can contribute and just worry about playing the game, because everything else from the coaching staff to the roster, the talent around them is going to be set for them. All they got to do is go out there and hoop. So, my mindset is if it falls in the top five, I think you draft one of those guys. I think if it's below that, I would consider packaging it and seeing what I could do to add to the roster, continue to add depth in certain areas, you know, move, you know, trying to figure out an option or you know, upgrading Devontae Graham.
I was just about to say, go ahead and say it. I'm about to say, just go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Finding a way to upgrade Devontae Graham. Yeah, I mean, that's why I would be. But if you get an opportunity to get in that top five, you take one of those guys, man. I mean, you could really be, like, we talking about how special they could be when Zion comes back. But I mean, you're able to add one of those talents, and they're coming off of your bench, you know, with no pressure other than to just go out there and hoop versus having to be in Orlando, you know, or Houston, where it's a little different, man. I mean, we could be talking about something really special.
I like this one. I want your thoughts on this too, Chris. Who do we have in a Philly Raptors series? And Vinay had an add-on question. Does Toronto have an advantage if unvaxxed players can't play in Canada in the playoffs? So, Kings, I'll let you start there. Philly Raptors, who you got?
Maples, I know you took the Raptors, but, I just feel like Embiid would be too much. And, yeah, I don't know. I feel like Philly will find a way to win at least that series. Second round, probably not. But I think they'll edge that series out in a tough six or seven games. I got Philly. And do they have an advantage by not allowing unvaccinated players? I mean, yeah. I mean, if their whole team is vaccinated and the opposing team is not, absolutely, that's an advantage, especially if the opposing team has a good unvaccinated player. So that is an extra home court advantage for them in terms of availability. But you know, that's the rules or the laws in Canada, so it's nothing you can do about it.
Chris, who you got in the Raptors?
Man, my heart wants to pick Toronto so bad, man. It's unhealthy how, like, while loving and the Pelicans top to bottom, man, the Raptors my second favorite team in basketball, man. I love what they're doing, and I didn't understand any of the talk earlier about trading Fred VanVleet, and maybe that's something you do, you know, you eventually have to figure out down the line. But you know, I wanted to see them healthy, and OG still battling. He's battling a new injury now. Hopefully he's back soon. But man, but at the end of the day, bro, I mean they're coming out there with, you know, 6'7", 6'8" centers, man. Pascal Siakam's your center. I just, you know, Joel should have 40 a night, man. And if they're going to double, you know what I mean, the shooters should be able to make them pay. I think James Harden on you know, playing opposite side, weak side, should be able to, redeem something for Jason to forgive him for his playoff struggles. But, I just don't see – I watched the Raptors play the Pelicans, man, and Jonas Valanciunas looked like
Hakeem.
Yeah, man. I mean, and we talk about Jonas. Jonas looked like Hakeem out there, bro. So what is Joel going to look like against that front line? This is not, and they're not gonna. And Toronto's not gonna change from that. That's who they are. That's what they committed to. So I just think it's too much. I think they can win. It could go seven, but I got Philly.
Right. So here's the thing. I think you guys are 100% right about the Embiid matchup. He's going to kill them every minute he's on the floor. But just like when Toronto beat him last time, they just destroyed the 76ers in the non Embiid minutes. So even if he plays, let's say he plays 37, 38 minutes, that's 10 minutes of basketball where you're getting killed. You know what I mean? So like that's kind of where I'm going with it. I think it's going 6 or 7 regardless. And like I said, I'm calling my shot, man. I got Toronto winning that series, man. I just really think Harden's going to be in the seventh circle of hell dealing with all those wings, man. There's just no space for him to kill anybody and search for a matchup weakness.
Yeah, Maples, they go inside out. You know, at the end of the day, he's still going to get favorable looks because they're going to have to double Embiid, and that's going to give him the numbers advantage when he catch off and then he attack the closeout. So,
that could very well happen. I just, you know, it's a long series to me, and I just think it's right. I think it's a long series regardless.
I would have agreed with your take if, you know, Embiid played like Clint Capella, you know what I mean? But Embiid can get it on the outside, he can get it on the inside. He's a real nightmare to handle, and you can literally play off him as opposed to off Harden. So I think that's what's gonna take Philly over the top, at least for that matchup.
Chris, another one for you. Do you feel vindicated from warning C.J. McCollum when the Pels fans said before the season they would not trade N'Keal Alexander Walker for him?
Bro. Every time I, like, think about this shit, bro, it makes my head explode, man. I mean, I don't even have – like Vinay just stirring shit because he know how I feel about this, man. Like, no, I don't feel vindicated. I just feel like part of all fan bases are stupid. Like, that's just it. Like, what are we talking about, bro? Like, I think it's okay sometimes, man, to just know that you don't watch as much basketball as you want the world to believe you do. And like that's, and sometimes that's what people deal with. Like, people did not know how good C.J. McCollum was. So what we're talking about, you wouldn't trade Nall for him. You wouldn't trade Josh Hart for him. Get them the fuck out of here, man. Ask them that question now. N'Keal can't get off the fucking bench, man. He can't be Trent Forrester out, whatever the hell his name is, for minutes. And you want to tell me you wouldn't trade him for C.J. McCollum? Ask them that shit now and see what they say. That's the dumbest. And well, you know what? And every fan base gonna have to deal with it. If you remember the conversations, people not you know what I mean, wanting to trade THT and so on and so forth. Every fan base has to have this discussion at some point. If you got a young talent that's even looks like he can be something, but that was just stupid, Vinay. So thank you for pissing me off.
Facts. All right, man. We got one caller. We go get out of here. Lebon, you still there? Sorry for the wait, man. We had some questions.
Sorry, bro. Yeah, I was just going to ask about the play-in tournament that starts next week. I was going to ask about the Clippers specifically because they just got PG back and they got Norman Powell back. I'm like, so I'm thinking, like, if they make it out of it, you guys see them giving Memphis or Phoenix like a real series.
Yeah, I can see it. I can definitely see that possibly happening. I still would pick Phoenix and the Clippers, Phoenix and the Grizzlies, probably in a, you know, six games, because I think it's just tough, man. When guys miss that much time and go right into high leverage games, it's tough to turn to hit that gear that's necessary, man. So I'm still picking, you know, Phoenix and Memphis to come out unscathed, whichever team they play against in the play-in on my end. Kings, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I would pick the Sixers to make it. I mean, the Clippers to make it tough, but you know, at the end of the day, like you said, just having guys come in back this late, the chemistry really hasn't been developed. And you know, once you put out those really high leverage adjustments, like the opposing teams like to do when in a deep series, it's going to be hard for a team that hasn't, you know, played that much together in so long to really be able to counter that on the court and execute effectively and consistently against those type of adjustments. But at the end of the day, though, they have a lot of talent, and just with PG alone, they could sneak one or two games. But I just think they won't have enough, you know, to be able to win against those teams.
Right. Just for the record, Chris told me Pelicans in seven when they get to the first round against whoever it is. I just want to let you know that. He said Pelicans at seven. It don't matter who.
I told my boy Miles I'm going to get the T-Wolves propaganda, so I'm going to be on the same boat.
But I don't You know what? It might end up – y'all might end up battling. You and Chris might end up battling, man. It might be T-Wolves and Pelicans for that A spot. We don't know yet.
We could, but I'm going T-Wolves all the way. And like I said, I don't care if y'all pull up the old tweets. Propaganda never gets erased.
Hey, Kings, how you feel? Just basketball perspective about a Clippers T-Wolves matchup, man. I don't think people are talking enough about that, about what that matchup can look like. It's really intriguing to me. But I'm curious as a T-Wolves fan, like how do you see that?
You know, I was talking with one of the people on the timeline, but we should win that game, honestly. Like, we should win that game. PG has not played enough games since he's been back. We have enough athletic wings, and Cat is been a matchup nightmare all year. I mean, he'll pull Zubac off the paint, and we'll be able to exploit that. And we should be able to win that game. If we're as good as what we showed throughout the year, we should be able to win that game. If we don't win that game, we should definitely be able to beat whoever. Pelicans, Spurs, I'm sorry. We should be able to beat whoever. Like, Miles was telling me that he's a little worried and there's concern about the playing because it's a one game, anything goes. But if you're good, you're a playoff team, man, you got to win one of those two. Like, that's just what it is.
Okay, so.
Go ahead. Yeah, sorry. We might be having two or three questions. Come on, man. It's a week night. I'm playing with you. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, you know, about the play-in tournament in general, right? Like, we know that they implemented it in the bubble to try to recoup some money. But, like, when you look at it, it's like, you know, a young team like Cleveland that's been, you know, playing so well the whole year, and now they got to fight for their lives next week in the playoff tournament. Do you guys think, like, the NBA's, you know, going to get rid of it because of that? You know, owners going to start complaining? Or do you guys see it as, like a long-term type of thing?
Adam Silver just said today is a long-term, it's a fixture. He said today, he had that little State of the League meeting or whatever that he does. He said it today is staying. Mile, I think me and Kings both said the same thing. We just think it should be a game threshold. Like, if I have like seven games up on you at the end of the 82, don't make me play a one-off for my season. Like, you know what I mean? They got to put a game threshold in it on my end. What about you, King?
Yeah, you know, I understand the game threshold because it's like, you know, it's like, man, like, how is it that you like eight games on the 500 and like, we're above 500 and if we lose to you, we not in the
office. Right.
Like, at the end of the day, though, I look at it as like, especially if you're the seventh seed and the eighth seed, it's like, you get two chances. You know what I mean? You get two chances to beat the playoffs. You play a playoff team, and if you can't beat a playoff team, well, then I don't know how good you are in the playoffs. And then if you lose to the playoff team and then you lose to a ninth and tenth seed right after, it's like, should you have been in the playoffs for real? Like, I really don't have much sympathy for a team that loses two straight playing games, one to a playoff team and then one to a ninth or tenth seed. Like, you know, I mean, like, I get the logic of there really doesn't need to be a threshold. If you're a playoff team, you're going to win those games.
You know, I respect that because your team is in the play-in. So, you know what I mean? I respect that.
If we can't beat the Spurs or the Pelicans, we are not a playoff team. That's just what it is, bro. Like, I don't know what else.
What we're not gonna do is compare the Pelicans and the Spurs in any form of facet. Okay, we're not gonna do that. But because we can go back to these Timberwolves Pelicans matchups throughout the year if you like. Okay, we can talk about them. You know, we don't talk about them now, but we can talk about them. Ain't nobody afraid to go on the Minnesota Kings. Tell you that right now.
I'm just saying, man. If we a playoff team, we gotta win one of these two, man. We just have to win it.
Cat start talking shit with that voice, man. Everybody will act like he liked that. I don't believe it yet.
I don't believe it either, man. But we faking it till we make it.
I don't believe them faces, Kings. I'm sorry.
It's like Muhammad Ali said, man. I said I was a great before I even knew I was, man. That's how I got to be sometimes. Fake it till you make it. Make sure you guys follow Impatient Bull on Twitter. Follow It's Kings Bro on Twitter. Follow myself, JJMaven55 underscore MST. Subscribe, follow the pod, give us feedback. We'll see you back here live next week with a playoff preview probably. Y'all be safe, Chris. I appreciate you. And we are out of here.